This is Rock and Roll Grad School with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling. Why do you build them up, Buttercup?
Hello, kiddies. We're going to have a good time together. We've got Roger Street Freeman on the show today, singer-songwriter. And I feel like I need to come clean, as professional as we keep this show. And you know this. I forgot to hit record at the start of the interview.
You did.
I did. So we kind of come in a couple minutes late. All you need to know is that Roger has a new record that is called Love, Hope, Trust. It is available now. And it was produced and a couple of songs were co-written and the album was played on by Larry Campbell, who has played with Levon Helm, Bob Dylan, and others. And I think that's about it.
That's a lot.
I know. So it's interesting. I was looking back over the last year and how quickly time changes. The number of shows I've gone to see in the past 12 months, in the past year. It's just been an embarrassment of riches. And I don't know if I have a favorite show that I've seen. Do you have one that this year that really stood out to you?
I had several.
And you can answer what they are.
Well, I'm contemplating. I mean, I think the festival in Kentucky was my favorite.
Bourbon
and Beyond.
Beyond, yes.
Because I had never seen Pearl Jam, and just being able to see Neil Finn and Liam Finn, and to see Neil Finn with Eddie Vedder, I think that was a benchmark moment. Sure. Sparks was also a benchmark moment.
Definitely.
And the Stones, really early in the year, although I'd seen them before, was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But then there are a million others that I would probably add. It was just a very good year of shows, because a lot of people were out that hadn't been out even for several years prior to COVID. And when was Elton? I think I saw Elton this year, too. I don't want to answer this.
No, there's a lot.
He'd be at the top, too.
Yeah, there's a lot. And I feel like all of them, I think there's just an overall sense of we get to leave the house.
True.
That made every show a lot of fun for now. I'm trying to just stay positive. Trying to stay upbeat. But I feel like everything from Sparks, just to see them in person, I felt like the entire audience was just ecstatic. But from seeing the Darkness and a friend of the show, the Dead Deads, to X, to friend of the show, Roxy Music, everybody just had a sense of, we get to be together again. And I think if nothing else, the takeaway is that it highlighted the joy with which music can bring us all together.
It's true. It's the one thing that can, I think.
I know. Yeah.
I don't even think chocolate can do it. I think it's only music.
Yeah. Good point.
Let's go back to the beginning. Time to pay some rent. All this time we've been moving. Hard to believe where we went. Troubled hearts and spinning wheels. Trouble blowing out from them. The butterflies in my stomach.
I did, and then I heard nothing. It was like radio silence for about 6 months. And I thought, okay, well, that's that. He hated it, but then you know, Larry's a very busy guy, as I've come to learn.
Yeah.
I think he may be the hardest working person in show business. But he sent me an email saying, I finally got a chance to listen to this stuff. I'm really, really impressed, and I'd love to work together if we can work it out, you know. And that was Rise, the 2020 album.
It's almost more of a credit to you that it did take that long, I feel, because that means you were constantly in the back of his mind, like wasn't going to let it go until the time was right and when he could give the time and attention to it. And then it's almost better, I feel, though probably very stressful at the time and frustrating, but.
You know, it's so long ago, actually, like it's not that long ago, but I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think that is a good way to think of it. Yeah. And I did have the thought, you know, he, you know, it's the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. Oh, he hated it, you know, because of course,
right.
Like every artist or person or human being, I have tons and tons of self-doubt. And on the other shoulder, you know, the angel saying he just hasn't had time to listen to it yet, you know, whatever.
But, right.
You know, just, but when that email came through, it was just an incredible, you know, like such an affirmation, you know, from a guy like that, you know, and, you know, there's no airs about Larry Campbell, you know, he is who he is, you know,
right.
He says what he thinks, and he's, you know, he's very kind, and, but he's not going to say that if he doesn't mean it.
Right. Right.
And so that was your record previous to this new one, correct? Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, that was Rise in 2020. And then, and we had just, you know, we had a great time recording that album, actually. And I, you know, I can't say enough about working with him just because, you know, from, there's all kinds of producers, and some producers are very much let the band do their thing, and then I'll make a suggestion here or there, you know, and it's very big picture, hands off, until the critical moment, you know, like in the song, like we have to give it a little more there, or take a little away there, or break it down here. But Larry's always thinking about how everything fits together at all times. And mm-hmm. not to say that he's not letting the band and me, you know, have freedom in the process and input. But the wheels are always turning, you know, and then I think he's always thinking about what he's going to, you know, what he's going to layer in on top of the basic tracks, and his arrangement ideas are always, you know, just really, you know, I guess there are many ways to skin a cat, but whenever he says, well, why don't we move this verse over here and this chorus over here or whatever, it's always like, oh, shit, why didn't I think of that?
Right. Like, oh, yeah, huh.
Well, and the interesting thing, too, is, I mean, you were saying, you know, he comes in and does a session on the first record, 10 hours. That's like a first date. When someone's producing your record, you guys are moving in together.
Yes.
This is it's a different relationship. It's a lot of trust, and it's so interesting. Again, you hear things about producers, especially producers who have a name in some way, shape, or form, of having certain ways of working, and I don't do this. And like you said, he doesn't sit back. He just came in. And did you ever stump him on any instrument where you're like, can you play this? Because I don't know how many times I've seen him play, and every time it's like he just picks up whatever and goes to town on this thing.
He's unstumpable. in fact, he's given me some homework when he stayed over one night, and the next morning we were just noodling around on the guitar, and I was I guess I'm always on the title track to this album, Love, Hope, Trust, he's playing the Strat, you know, and he's got these great lines that he's playing, and I'm like, where does that come from? You know, what's the vernacular that you're drawing on? You know, what, because it's, and of course it's a bunch of them all amalgamated into Larry Campbell, but
right.
But he said, you know, if you want to start somewhere, start with this guy Jerry Reed, who's just this great, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A guitar player, so he gave me some homework, so I'm working on some Jerry Reed tunes now, and it's miraculous that anybody could play the stuff that he played, and of course Larry can play it, like he just says, do this, you know, but I highly recommend checking out Jerry Reed to any listeners out there who are into guitar players and playing, because he's amazing. He played with Chet Atkins, did you know, just one of the all-time greats. But no, I've never been able to stump Larry.
It's fascinating.
And
so
I'm also, I mean, I'm sorry. I can
no, talk. Please, I please.
No, please.
People are tired of hearing us.
Yeah, no one wants to hear us.
Oh, that's not true.
Yeah.
You guys have, sound great and ask great questions. I'm really impressed with what I've heard. Every time he picks up an instrument to go, like, do his thing, it just, it's almost like the ideas come out fully formed, you know, like and I'm like, it's just so musical, and it's almost like a magical power that he has to make something just fit. It's the perfect line. It's not flashy necessarily, but it's so musical, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And on any instrument, and all the instruments he plays, he doesn't play them like a guitar player. You know, he plays the fiddle like a fiddle player. And
That's the biggest key, right?
Yeah.
Anyone can technically pick, not anyone. There are some very talented people that can pick something up and play it, but to play it with the soul of the instrument, exactly, is a whole different thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, this is your fourth record since your sort of hiatus from music.
Yeah.
Which I don't, 25 years, is that a hiatus? Is that what you call
sure.
that?
I think
break? That's... Vacation? I don't know.
That's a good question. There may be another word for it.
Yeah.
Sabbatical?
But
yeah, sabbatical, that's yeah. Sabbatical I like.
But four records in, how has your songwriting changed on this new one? And how has it sort of evolved? Do you go into the studio now with stuff fully laid out? Or do you know, I'm going to leave space so we can kind of grow these things and get the, because again, not just Larry Campbell, you have some other really great musicians playing on this record.
Yeah. I mean, the songs are pretty much written into the studio. The first part of the question, I mean, I just think with doing anything repetitively over and over again and spending enough time on it, you grow and change and evolve. And I think I've gotten better as a songwriter. In terms of being able to say something with less words. I don't know. I still write a lot of words, but maybe better analogies and metaphors and similes and all that. I think the writing on this record, I mean, I think there's some really, it's gotten to another level. And I think that's just time put in, you know, the whole 10,000 hour thing. You know, and tackling some really difficult subject matter, you know, like there's a song called The Ghosts of Sugarland on this record that's about convict leasing after the Civil War. And it's, you know, I'm fairly certain it's going to be banned in Florida and Texas.
Well, here's hoping.
Well, you know. Yeah. Oops.
So, you know, telling stories in a way that keeps it compelling and interesting and really and truthful. So I think the songwriting has evolved. And then in terms of coming into the studio, I mean, the songs are pretty much written. And the way Larry and I have been doing it is I'll send him, he had like 30 songs, and then he picks the ones that he lobbies for, the ones that he wants to be on it. And I'll say, oh, I agree with that, but how about this one too, you know? And what happens from there is when we don't come in necessarily with an arrangement idea. So we just have the demo and then we'll come in here with the band and sit down in the studio and just play through the tune. And then I think ideas will evolve from there. Most of the time the song remains pretty much where it is, but sometimes it goes in a radically different direction. And that's, you know, based on everybody's input, and Larry will have there's a song called Vapor in the Air that I wrote kind of as a real acoustic-y singer songwriter kind of a vibe. And it turned into a Latin groove kind of a thing. And that was all Larry, and we loved it. So I hope I answered that question.
For sure.
Yeah, no, definitely.
When you had that epiphany, to come back to it, those years ago. Did you think you'd be coming back to it this full force? Or did you think, you know, I just got to get back into it a little bit here, a little bit there?
Well, I think, no, definitely not. I think my first goal was to make a record that sort of cataloged some of my older songs and also to have something to leave for my daughter. You know, we didn't, and my son wasn't born at the time. You know, and there was a lot of, so it was, I don't want to call it a vanity project, but it was a vanity project. You know, it was like, let's get this music down in a form that I could be proud of. Because I grew up in the studio and I, you know, I wasn't happy with the quality of any of my own demos in my basement. I didn't have the right gear and all of that stuff. So I really wanted to make something that was fully formed to have for posterity. So that was the first record. And then it got like played on the radio and stuff. And I was like, oh, well, look at that. You know,
maybe twist my arm if, yeah.
And then the second, you know, was really proud of the second record. And I think it was after that that I really was able to focus a lot more on writing and spending a lot more time doing this. And glad you can edit out the pauses.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're standard. Yeah.
We're adding extra pauses.
Yes. Yeah. Setting up.
That's when it, when it, when I really started to be able to learn about myself and about myself as a writer and how to follow that thread when it came and really go deeper and you know, and you know, I think because I, as a writer, I really, all of my favorite writers just, you know, they go right for the jugular, you know, like,
yeah,
beating around the bush in a Joni Mitchell song, you know, or a Paul Simon song or a Jackson Browne song. So I, and that's a working to where you're not afraid to say what you really need to say is hard,
mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, you don't want to offend people who might see themselves in that line. They have a very personal song, you know. So, but that's when I think it really started to click that I really started to feel like an artist and not just a guy that had come back to it and was making some records, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an epiphany. And then working on Rise with Larry was another level deeper. And, you know, another confidence builder in terms of myself as a writer and a singer and a songwriter. I said writer twice there, sorry.
Well, you know, it's an important part of the process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on the new record, and like you said, as you've sort of evolved and grown as a writer and as an artist, this new batch of songs, do you think these are things that you wrote for yourself, or do you think you wrote them for other people? Because when you're writing about slavery and you're, you know, doing stuff that is going to either stir up people one way or the other, who is that for?
Well, I think I write everything for myself. Mm-hmm. With the hope that it'll resonate with other people. You know, there's, I'm like a news junkie, and I'm, especially now because, you know, every other day I worry that the world is going to come to an end.
Yeah, that's so. Always that possibility. Yeah.
So, and I think I'm moved by a lot of what I read, and I'm all, you know, like in the case of, like convict leasing, I was pissed off that I'd never learned about it in school. You know, I was like, well, why don't they teach this? You know, and obviously, there's obvious reasons why nobody wants to look at it really,
mm-hmm.
In depth, but, so for me, it was a way to teach myself the story. And also, you know, I was excited about that song because it was like a, I felt like it was my stab at a song like the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, mm-hmm. you know, one of those old folk songs that, so it was kind of like for myself, like skill building, and then also a little history lesson. And, you know, yeah, I hope people gravitate towards it. Actually, I sang it in Philly the other night, and when I got to one of the lines, the whole crowd erupted in, like, you know, shrieks. I think I touched a nerve with some old folkies.
Yeah. Well, in the so this record, you wrote it over the past few years. So I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this, but are a lot of the songs sort of allegorical, metaphorical, or are they sort of all harsh, sort of this is what happened? And depending on which one, is that because you could or could not find enough rhymes for the word pandemic?
Yeah, not much comes to mind.
And yeah, it's really, they all ended, you know, you got your epidemic, but that's still the same thing, really. Right. It's a half rhyme.
Right, right. I can't, no, yeah. Yeah, that was definitely part of the problem. There are definitely allegorical songs on there. There's a song called Cut Your Losses, which is on the surface about an old Victorian house that was built before the Civil War that's kind of falling down, and but it's sort of a metaphor for my perception of the GOP. Mm. Not to get too political, I mean, but that's
no. I see where that's going. I get it.
Yeah.
Not a political show. We always caveat, we are not a political show.
But makes sense.
Makes sense.
There were more, you know, so I think it was most of the writing on this was just like from the perspective of a person living in the world with everything that's going on, and like a person who has a family. And there's songs about, you know, that were inspired by my family, like Multiply by Two was about one of my kids. We were sitting around the fireplace in the living room on a very, very cold night in the winter. And maybe it was during the pandemic even, I can't exactly remember. And my son, who's younger than my daughter, said, asked me who I love more.
Fair question.
Him or his sister. And I said, definitely you. No.
Well, I you know, we were talking a minute ago. I was like, yeah, I bet there have been some times where those two are in an argument and your daughter's like, he's written way more songs about me. And if the first one was about me.
That's right. That's now they're all about both of them.
Now I have to share.
And songs, you know, so that's a pretty, there's a song, Multiplied by Two. It's a pretty romantic, sweet song about the two of them. And then there's another song called I Want Her to Know, which was written after having kind of like a screaming match with my teenage daughter. Uh-huh. And so there's that. And then, you know, Love, Hope, Trust is really about how no one's talking to each other anymore. And, you know, we're all just scared, you know, it's like fear, fear, fear. And, you know, how do we get past that? And, Annabelle is about human trafficking, you know, sex trafficking. It was another story that I'd heard on the news about a girl who was tricked by her quote unquote boyfriend into coming up to San Diego and, you know, basically sold into slavery. I lost the original question, but I think it's both.
Yeah.
Allegorical and very specific. Felix, sadly, my producer, and who became a good friend of mine, passed away in 2020. So there's a song called About You on there, which is about him. And
do you know what all these songs are about when you start writing them?
No, I.
Or do you kind of halfway through go, oh, this is what I think I'm talking about here?
it works both ways, but it's mostly the second way.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's because a lot of, for me, the process starts usually with a riff or a chord pattern on the guitar. And then, you know, singing nonsense words, and then sometimes that gets recorded into a voice memo, and then later I'll come back to it and say, what was I saying? And I'll find a thread there. But I find coming back to things is not such a great way for me to work. If I don't finish it, it takes a long time to finish. So if I get something that I'm excited about, I will just sing the nonsense words until a phrase comes in. And then once that phrase comes in, then I'll open up my laptop and I used to write stuff down, but now it's just so much more efficient to do Word, and I'll just start writing the song. And sometimes it's not clear where it's going, and I get pleasantly surprised.
I was gonna say, that's kind of fun, that mysterious journey for yourself.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I've really taken to heart and learned how to do is to accept, to not get frustrated by the fact that I don't know what this is yet, because it sucks mm-hmm. right now. You know, like in the middle there, it's, you know, if you can imagine somebody chipping away at a piece of stone.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it doesn't look so great while it's in the process, you know, until it starts to get closer to being fully done. So I think that was a big lesson for me to learn, was to just be patient with the process. And that's I think that's why the songs have gotten to another level.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
You said Larry kind of picked a early track list from the 30 songs. Is there any ones that he really missed the boat on that you're saving for the next record now, just to show him, or did he do a pretty good job?
Well, I think he did a great job. And unfortunately, there are some that I wish we could have gotten to, but it would have just been too many songs for one.
Right.
I've got one that didn't get on there is called The Land of the Leaf Blower and the Mighty SUV.
And, what's that about?
About all the Xanax that gets taken in. I think it's a good problem to have, you know.
Oh, certainly.
We're both looking forward to the next one now. In fact, I'm going to see him next week because I was asked to sing a Hank Williams song for a cover album, a compilation that a local label is putting out. So Larry's going to help me put that together too. So I'm excited about
that. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So how is the live performance of these going over? You happy with the reception? I mean, if people in Philly are ready to join you in the street, I mean, that's a good sign.
Definitely a good sign.
It's going great. Really great. We did play some of these over the summer too, while we were in the process of recording the record. So I had a little bit of experience with it. I think people, the band has also gotten to a really good spot now where it's really gelled and it's all about putting over the song and making sure that everybody can hear the words and it's been really, really positive. No one's
awesome.
Sometimes there are songs that are lyrically very important, and sometimes it's musically very important, like the motifs and the themes and the figures get played, and that's what makes the total live experience happen. And sure. I think we've gotten both of those.
Cash sits in a box on the bedstand. Night falls like the point of a dart.
Love, Hope, Trust by Roger Street Freeman is available right now wherever you get your music. For more information and for live dates, check out his website, rogerstreetfreeman.com. You can also find him on Facebook, facebook.com/rogerstreetfreeman.
You can check us out on all the various socials. Be sure to visit our website at rockandrollgradschool.com. And don't forget to leave us a review.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hegquist. Our reluctant producers are John Sauvé and Sandy Stone. Our willing producers are Rachel Allen and Randy Jeanette. Our intern is Zach Jackson. This one's for Philippe. Thank you, good night, and may all your favorite bands stay together.